Miss Farnborough, Reel 8.
Don't know what it was.
Did you have chloroform?
Yes, we had chloroform for the big stomach cases, you know, in cases like that.
Did you ever run out of opium or morphia or chloroform?
Luckily, no, and I will tell you why. We belong to the Zemstvo, and the Zemstvo is a very rich organization in conjunction with all the governments or counties, as they were called governments then in Russia. And whenever there were big base stores always near the front line, and we had constantly liaison officers going between us and the Red Cross unit and the base, and they would bring back or order anything of which we were running short. So I can truthfully say that right until the end, even during the retreat, we could get what we wanted. But there again, there was no time, for we were being sent on and on and on. And in the advance in 1916, the base stores followed us because we were advancing, and they went from one town to another and always supplying us when we needed. And we had our special transport for the base stores, and they would always send on anything and everything we wanted. We had a marvelous equipment, thanks to the tremendous organization of the Zemstvos.
What was the procedure at a frontline dressing station when you received a patient?
Well, we never had them in their ones and twos. You see, the moment the ambulance came, they would place the patients, the wounded soldiers, around our tents if there were tents, or around on the open space if there were huts. It depended. Mostly we were having tents because, being mobile, we had to move constantly and couldn't always get under a roof. So we would have the tents put up. There were men set apart for putting up the tents and taking them down, arranging the table, putting on the various druggets and things that we needed, you know. It was all very well organized and all very well, really easily run, because each one had his or her own special work. When I say her, that was rather exaggerated, because we were a very small company. We were just four surgical sisters, and our duty was to clean, dress the wounds. And then there were others who would, the sanitars would come and take the soldiers whose wound had been dressed away to the hut or the tent where he would be lying until the ambulance came up. The ambulances would come up, probably 12 or two dozen of them at a time, and go off, a long train of these little white hooded vans, you know, drawn by one or two horses, down the road. And then soon after that, another train would come. When I say train, I mean another dozen or so would come up empty. Or they would come and bring us wounded. And when we had taken the wounded out, we would have filled them with those who had been dressed and send them on to the base.
Did you have any motor ambulances?
Yes, we had several motor ambulances, which were very, very useful. And we were thankful to have them, not at first, but after a while there were quite a number of them sent. And we were very grateful for them, because we knew that the soldiers would suffer much less by going in a quick motor ambulance than by these small carts which trundled over stony roads and dreadful tracts of land. So we were very grateful to them, but they unfortunately didn't appear till quite at the end of the war. They would have been in much greater demand probably in the northern, the Prussian war, and we were more or less in the Polish and East Galician, the Austrian South southern front.
Were you treated as though you were a qualified sister with several years of training?
We were qualified.
Well, but most sisters have a few years rather than a few months.
That is in England. And that isn't, but in Russia, if we passed our exams and had 6 months of training with the wounded and dying soldiers, not with the ordinary sick people, we were qualified. I was made a town sister once, Gorodskaya Sestra. And that was a great compliment, and that meant that I could be really at the head of the profession in the town and go to any of the hospitals as a town sister. And but those 6 months, we had every kind of experience in dressing wounds and in operating. The difficulty for me was the theoretical work, writing it all down and speaking it for my exams, but I managed to, because I learned very, very much of it by heart. And I was thankful to get through. And there again, I always think that it was my nationality that pulled me through those difficult times. The doctors knew I was English, and the doctors knew that I was terribly anxious, that I was craving to have the opportunity to help Russia, even as I would have done it, the same work if I could have done so in my own country. And I think they thought, well, let's give her the opportunity. They certainly did. And I was always, and shall be, always grateful for their indulgence. Please go. Of course, Mrs. Brooks, why it was interesting for them, because, as you know, in the world has changed so drastically within the last 20, 30 years. So can you imagine what it has changed since the beginning of the century? And these women that I knew in those days, there were hundreds and hundreds of them, completely illiterate, completely unenlightened, completely away from the real life of the world. And they could manage, with a vernacular of probably 200 to 300 words at the most. So if you took any books by Pushkin, Lermontov, Turgenev, or any other Russian literary person and read them to it, they would be like Greek or Chinese to them.
It wasn't only the women, though, who were like that.
Oh, I'm stressing the women, no, because they aren't, but that's why they said the women. They knew that I included the men, only they wanted especially just to, perhaps even more wonderful with women than with men, that when I went to Russia 12 years ago, these women were completely educated, marvelously alert, with much wider ideas, enormously wide horizons, because they had been educated. And education had completely transformed them. They were no longer poverty-stricken, benighted peasants in the country, but they were townswomen going to their offices, to their mills, to their factories, to their shops. A wonderful transformation. I have always known that education was essential. You're not, you've not turned it on yet, have you, dear?
No.
Good. Did you like what I said just now?
Oh, yes. I think that's very interesting, especially the idea of having a language of only about 200 words.
Well, it depends. 200 to 300,
yes,
I would
but
say.
Just because how much that would limit you?
Well, no. It got away with all their food, their everyday work. They go to work. They would say, I go work. You see, the verb to be was never used in the present tense, never. They would never say, the book is on the table. They say, book on table. But because it was so inflected, the prepositions governed always the case. Книга на столе. Книга, книга is book. Книга под столем. The book is near the table. Книга около стола. So you see, the substantive itself took on the inflected suffix only when the movement had changed. It's a very difficult, terribly difficult language, but wonderfully interesting. If I were young and there, I would just stick to Russian and learn it through and through and through, because it's marvellous.
But wouldn't everyone have spoken that way? Just those sentences you gave would you, as a middle-class educated woman,
I'm not saying that.
Thing?
The only thing is, for instance, they never had a book, Kniga. I don't suppose they ever spoke about a book. No, you go into a more refined environment and you hear people talking about this, that book and the other. Book is mentioned 100,000 times. But because it doesn't come into the life of the peasant, it's never spoken of. And gradually, the word may fall out completely. It's a very, very wonderful thing. The same thing happened with meat. A Russian peasant told me that he had never eaten meat in his life. Now, that seems very strange to me, because when, after the revolution, the first thing they did was to more or less confiscate all the cattle, all the most wonderfully prized herds of cattle, and at the same time see that they had their own share of them. And I have mentioned in my book that it was very strange to me to see a great loin of roast beef on a peasant table, never having been there in their lives before. Now it was beginning to appear. That itself was a symbol of the new life that there was opening for them. Just a loin of roast beef or a leg of lamb. You can't imagine how they... And yet, Mrs. Brooks, don't imagine for a moment that they were not happy. They made their own happiness. And why were they happy? Because they were ignorant and could never even dream of a fuller, better life. So they accepted what came to them. And in that acceptation, they made their own happiness. And they were happy. They were carefree, though they had very little to eat. The food was poor. And above all, there was complete lack of all hygiene. No hygiene at all. No sanitation. How they lived, I don't know. And the children, how they broke them up, I don't know. I think it was that nature, the old nurse, took the children, all of them, one by one on her knee and just cared for them, you know. But it was really a miracle to see how healthy and strong they were, though the young mothers aged very quickly, because their life was very, very difficult with all the responsibilities of the household and with the hard, very strenuous work in forest and field. It was quite a wonderful world.
The Russian family that you stayed with, the Yusofs,
yes,
must have had peasants on their country estate.
They had very many. Yes. Would you like me to tell you about this later?
Yes, but I was just thinking, as an English woman coming there, it must have seemed strange to you the way the peasants were treated. No, English people were treated like that at the time. And even though they were happy, it must have seemed odd to you at first that they would have been treated in such a way. Or could you realize that that was the way to...
I don't quite understand how you mean by treat. They were treated marvelously well. I'm sorry, Mrs. Brooks. You obviously haven't explained what you mean by the word treat. The people I knew not only with the Usovs, but I was staying with people on the Volga, and I was staying in many other parts in Russia. They treated their servants, their workmen, their workmen's wives and children wonderfully well, and were very generous. Now, yes. Anna Ivanovna Usov, for example,